Now we have John Carr, who will talk about plant viruses in relation to insect-transmitted virus diseases and how you take this fundamental research out into field, ultimately into field application. Thanks, John.
Thank you very much. So
we've had the beef and chicken courses. Now we're moving on to the boring vegetarian option, which I'm being a bit biased against vegetarian meals. But we're going to be talking about beans and in the sort of East African context. I can't help throwing in a comment there about the issue with transgenic plants, which is that there's a really brilliant paper that came out a few weeks ago showing that sweet potato, which is very widely eaten, is a natural transgenic crop and contains exactly the same kind of constructs that I, for 30 odd years, have been sticking into plants, and it's when it's evil and artificial. So, ha ha ha. Yeah, I'm really, really happy about that. So, unfortunately, we don't have transgenics as part of this particular program. So, what I want to focus in on, and I'll try and keep brief, is a program that involves partners both in here in Cambridge and also in East Africa at SEAT and at Becker Ilrey, and also partners in the UK at Rothamsted. And I'll describe who the partners are in a bit more detail later. So why beans? Why did the BBSRC and a consortium of other funders fund us to work on beans? Well, they are very important, especially in this context. They're important as a source of protein. So if your beef and chicken isn't available, then beans might be a good option. They're also a good supplier of micronutrients. And they're also useful agronomically as well, because they fertilize the soil, their legumes. A lot of people in East Africa will grow them as an intercrop, and the nitrogen enrichment will help the growth of things like cassava or maize in particular, say in Kenya. And also a very useful cash crop. And my understanding is that these are very often traded, especially by women, so there's some sort of gender benefit there, where women will tend to, say, pay for education or medical care for children. One of the things, I'm a sort of like lab rat. Well, there is a picture of me out and about, but I don't get out very often, nor do they let me back in the lab very often, for various dangerous reasons. And so it's important we have a way of disseminating the work that we do to those that might find it actually useful. And so a very important partner in this at SEAT in Uganda is Robin Barakura, and he runs this organization called the Pan-Africa Bean Research sort of Association, and they make sure that various users, including growers, get the information they need by various ways. So I feel this is important, because it's all very well for us to do something amazing in the lab or even in the field, but if it doesn't get out there, it's probably not much use. Now, we are the viruses aren't in the title, but we are working with three particular viruses, two of which are particularly important in East Africa for the damage they cause to the bean crop. The two most important ones are called bean common mosaic virus, which you'll find worldwide and causes some problems throughout the world. There's another one called bean common mosaic necrosis virus. So it's very closely related to this virus, and I'll tell you about the problem with that in a moment. And the other virus we're interested in is cucumber mosaic virus, which does cause some problems to bean cultivation, but it also, the reason we're interested in it as well, is it causes a lot of problems for a lot of other crops too, whereas these viruses are sort of legume specialists. So why is, say, this particular virus that I've put in red here, why is that a particular problem? Why are we worried about it? Well, in many parts of the world, you can cultivate bean plants containing resistance genes. And there's one particular dominant resistance gene called the I gene, which is very good for containing and preventing the spread within the plant of this virus, being common mosaic. But this very closely related virus, being common mosaic necrosis virus, when it encounters a plant with an I gene, then this happens. The plant starts to die. And that's because part of the response that the I gene conditions is a programmed cell death program. And this is in response to the presence of this virus. This is very closely related. So the resistance mechanism is switched on, but the virus somehow is able to keep moving through the plant. And wherever it goes, it causes the induction of this programmed cell death. Now, this particular virus is endemic to East and Central Africa. It doesn't occur much more widely, which is good. But because this is present in all those wild legumes surrounding the field, it's a problem. Now, how does it get from, let's say, a wild legume reservoir into the crop? It gets there using these. You can see these little dots here. I'll show you some pictures in a moment. These are aphids. These particular ones are black bean aphids. And they, by themselves, cause some damage to the crop. But they and other aphids are the likely vectors for these viruses in the field. I say likely. Now, plant viruses are transmitted between hosts by insects, and aphids are probably the most important single group of vectoring insects. And there was some interesting work done a few years ago, and we've done similar experiments where you can have a plant infected. In this case, it's experiments with cucumber mosaic virus. And what was found was that aphids were attracted to virus-infected plants. So there was some kind of change in the chemical volatiles being given off by a virus-infected plant was drawing in the aphid. But the clever old virus, what it also did when it changed the biochemistry of the plant was to make these plants taste nasty to viruses. Sorry, to aphids. Sure, the virus doesn't care. So although this aphid, she's full of hope, as she comes towards this delicious-smelling plant, as soon as she tastes it, she's put off. And I'd like to say that she goes off, sadder but wiser, but I don't think wisdom is part of the behavioral or mental repertoire of aphids. But what she does carry with her as a sort of souvenir of her happy experience is on the mouth parts, the stylet of the insect, are now a lot of virus particles stuck to it. Now, this is a very, very simple mode of transmission, and it's similar for the bean common mosaic necrosis and CMV viruses. And there's no uptake of the virus. The insect does not become infected with the virus. It just moves around for a short time carrying this virus on its stylet. So if you think about it, this is a good strategy for encouraging vectors to come into an infected host and then move them on to the next healthy host. So can we exploit what the viruses have done? Can we learn lessons from it? Can we find out what chemicals are attractive or repellent and somehow use that to help to protect the crop? Well, in the East African context, what we want to do really is check whether or not the aphids, which are sort of well known to be present on beans, such as the black bean aphid or another one called Mysis persici, whether these are really the genuine vectors or whether it's something no one suspected. And no one's really looked at this for more than 20 years. So in partnership with farmers who are willing to allow us to sort of tromp all over their fields and stick these strange little yellow traps out there, this is Francis Womonje, who's in the audience. Where are you? Oh, there you are. That's Francis. Hi, Francis. So, obviously, as a PI, I'm observing closely while he does all the work. And Actually, he's also being observed by a chameleon there, but they are, you know, notably hard to spot. So he's he's collecting aphids with a paintbrush, very artistic guy, into little vials, and also we're collecting flying winged aphids, which might land in these little yellow water traps. And there, here's Francis again being observed by me and a surprise colleague, and to see me in a lab. And he's loading a robot there to sort of collect RNA and DNA, DNA for the insects, RNA for the viruses, and to analyze these to see what vectors were actually present, what viruses are present, and also to get this is sort of deep sequencing, so we're not just focused on those three viruses. Hopefully we'll get a much more holistic picture on what viruses are there and whether there's any real association between our favorite viruses and any particular vector insect species. Another part of the project is to understand what were those delicious smells, or maybe repellent smells and tastes that are engendered in the plant by infection with the virus. So we want to know, for example, you know, what would be attractive or repellent compounds emitted by these virus-infected bean plants. Can we analyze them? I just showed this picture. This is, again, from Francis. This is where he's placed a fine gold wire on the back of this black bean aphid, and that's attached to an electronic monitoring device, and we can analyze feeding behavior, but that's another story. So just to show that there are changes in the smells, the volatile chemicals emitted by infected bean plants, turns out to be a little bit different from the situation in cucumber infected with cucumber mosaic virus. Again, this is work by Francis along with Matt Davey, Alex Murphy, Nick Kenneth, who did the analysis for us. I'll just take you through this slowly. Hopefully it looks very daunting and scientific. It's not a light cloud. So here, if you encase these plants in a sort of bell jar and pass air over them and analyze the trapped volatiles, you have a little filter that traps the volatiles, analyze those in a gas chromatography, mass spectrometry device, you can analyze what chemicals are there. This is called a principal component analysis diagram, and it's a kind of a Venn diagram to show you whether or not particular treatments such as bean common mosaic virus infection or CMV infection, whether they produce largely the same chemicals or whether they produce very different chemicals. If they're all producing just the same volatile chemicals, they'll all be grouped closely together. And this is a way really of showing actually that these two viruses produce quite different sets of chemicals from healthy plants, the mock inoculated, non-infected plants here. And there's not that too much difference actually between what the bean common mosaic virus and bean common mosaic necrosis virus, these very similar viruses produce. And from this, we are going to take this work on with colleagues in Rothamsted to further analyze which of these components are actually biologically active in terms of the responses of the insects. There's two ways of doing that. One is very simply behavioral assays with pure chemicals to see which way the insects go. But before getting to that stage, they wire up the insect antennae to an electrophysiological rig. And as these volatiles come out of this analytical apparatus, they pass over these wired antennae, and you see which specific chemicals or mixtures of chemicals engender a physiological response. That gives you a clue as to what are useful chemicals to focus in on. Because frankly, there are an awful lot of volatiles represented by these big colored blobs. Now we know that the volatiles in total are having definite effects on insect behavior. As I said, it's a little bit different from what we were seeing in the cucumbers and the cucumber mosaic virus. So this is with CMV again. Grab some data out. What these distributions represent is where most of the aphids go if you give them the choice, several hundred aphids over a number of experiments, whether they want to move towards a severely infected plant or whether they want to move away from it. The answer is, if you give them a choice between two healthy plants, their distribution is such that they don't really make a choice at all. But if you give them the choice, I have absolutely got this diagram the wrong way around. Might want to check that poster. So what this is actually supposed to say is non-infected. So the virus infected plants are now producing, beyond a certain stage of infection, produce a smell, if you like, which makes the insects go away, and they have a tendency then to move towards the non-infected plants, which again probably makes some kind of epidemiological sense, I hope, looking at Chris, who's our epidemiological consciences on this project. So talking about epidemiology, so...
And conscience.
He is like Jiminy Cricket. Jiminy Aphid. So how can, if, for example, we were able to modify the volatile blend produced by a bean plant or other crop plant, or if we were able to deploy traps or repellent objects, producing these volatile substances, and we deployed them, okay, what would be the best way of deploying them? Would it be to form a barrier around a main crop? Would it be best to disperse them in some way? Similarly, I was rather disparaging about those resistant plants. So maybe a rather straightforward thing might be, we don't want to deploy 100% of these resistant plants, because actually they'll be killed by the bean con mosaic necrosis virus. But we might be able to put a certain proportion in which the insects will feed, lose the virus, and then move on, and we'll sacrifice a few plants. So in order to understand whether these options are good, indifferent, or could actually make the problem worse, we have our epidemiological partners on this. And so the ongoing work is lab experiments to simulate field layouts of the control conditions, and at CS in Uganda they're translating this work into field plot tests, and of course interspersed with all this is modeling support. So this is a partnership of people in Kenya, in Uganda, and here's our Kenyan postdocs. She's not our postdoc anymore. She got promoted to being Minister of Agriculture in Rwanda. It's one of those things where, you notice where people get promoted past you. Anyway, so our farmers, of course, have been instrumental in helping us be able to sort of get baseline data. And here's Francis and our team in the virology group with Chris and Nick Cunniff and Rory, our new addition. And at Rothamsted, helping us with this work on volatiles, are John Pickett and Toby Bruce. And then we have David Volk, who are members of his group, who have been helping us with sort of deep sequencing type things. I'll stop there.
Thank you.
Yes.
Plants that attract particular vectors and those that push them away interplanted with the crops. So have you used that as well?
Well, that was very much the inspiration for the work. We were wondering if we could do the same with aphid-transmitted virus diseases. And I know he has done work, and I think there's ongoing work to see if they can integrate, say, bean into those systems, because it is... a fairly critical crop. So basically, yes, I mean, the reason we wanted him on board was his experience in this. We would anticipate, probably beyond the remit of this immediate program, but to have a sort of maybe not a push-pull, but maybe this is a pull-push system, really. You're drawing in the aphids and then repelling them. But maybe we could turn it around and just have a push away from them. But then that's why we want the epidemiologist, because if we make the aphids too active, maybe they'll be better at spreading the disease.
Martin. Thank you, Martin Jones. Thank you for that great talk. I wanted to ask you a sort of overarching question about the context of your research, and that was, I wondered what your view was about the relationships between predator risk and Africa's reliance on a small number of American species. And I spoke, and you conveniently mentioned three, the beans and the maize and the cassava.
Yeah.
I wondered what your view was about the place of the wide range of indigenous legumes and whether they have a part to play in the future of legume production within Africa.
Well, of course, you know, bean is another, well, common bean anyway, is another American origin crop. But the benefit is there are now so many different sort of, I suppose, land races of bean. There's quite a lot of variety there. I guess the remit, and this is where my limitations come in as a rather newbie to this area, is I'm actually not so knowledgeable about a lot of its sort of indigenous crops.
I mean, the thing is in the lab rats and say, well, I mean, I really don't know whether there's mileage in it. It's just an interesting theme generally about whether indigenous taxa are.
Francis, help? Any thoughts?
It's obviously something that does need looking at, and Cambridge is a place where those sorts of conversations can happen.
Yeah.
I think Lydia, and then I'll call us to lunch.
So, Lydia Smith from Nile, I didn't say before. Bit of an off the wall, a counterintuitive question, but is there any mileage to be made in making the crop more attractive and to look at inducing volatiles in the non infected crop?
There is one of the things we're playing with at the moment. In principle, it would be really nice to have, let's say, a crop plant which was attractive to the vectors but resistant to the virus, because at least for this, for most of the aphid transmitted viruses, and certainly for the ones we're mostly focusing on, the virus is not retained for very long on the mouthpart. So if you could keep bringing in any viruliferous, any virus-carrying insects into healthy plants, which were also resistant, that, and then maybe the aphids would move on, then maybe you'd have the benefit of kind of disinfecting the vector, and that is an idea we're playing with. Though we're playing with it at the moment mostly in model systems, but one of the experiments we are negotiating with our Ugandan partners to do is, in addition to our work with basically Arabidopsis, which it's easy to make that resistant, say, to any of these types of virus. Beans very difficult to make transgenic, unfortunately, but is to sort of deploy test plots where you have various mixtures of I-gene containing plants and non-I-gene, say farmer preferred varieties which are susceptible to the viruses, and then see if you slow down the progress of an epidemic in that mixture. But the ideal thing would be to actually have something that was resistant, that was actually attractive, and would tend to sort of waste the vector's time while not putting any selection pressure, like insecticides would, on the vectors.
I'm going to close it there, but it's a very nice example, I hope, of thinking about the ecology of the system in a broader broad context. And again, it comes back to scales, but how we take Dante's molecular biology out into the field and really does something with it. I'd like to thank John and all the speakers this morning for sticking to time. I've let us have a little bit of extra time for questions, because I think it's important. Please imagine that you have a little under 50 minutes for lunch, so if we could reconvene at 25 past, so we're in here to kick off bang on time, that'd be very good. Thanks to the speakers again, and to John. Thank you.